Okay, Doug, we're not hearing that sound down here. Thanks. Okay, we're not getting, is audio going to program for this computer? And the fader's up? Not muted. Okay. All right, let me, maybe I'll...
An HDMI computer, I think we gotta go into the control panel. try that video again?
Doug, do you have sound?
National bodies debating laws of national concern. I means victim. No. The IPU works for stronger parties that are more democratic and more representative. It sets standards and guidelines for its colleagues to measure their own performances. It defends the rights of parliamentarians who are persecuted for speaking out. Advocates the presence of more women in Parliament and works for the political empowerment of women. It runs programs to provide technical assistance, often in parliaments and countries for women. The IPU is active, building bridges and roads
on both sides, right?
Bringing MPs around the table to share their experiences in their tasks as legislators, recruiting expertise, explaining this. Much of this work is done under a strategic partnership with the United Nations. The Nations offers technical expertise to the EU offers a parliamentary dimension to the work. Ultimately, all significant negotiations in the intergovernmental sphere end up in the parliamentary chambers for debate, amendments, and review. Ultimately, the debates in the world's negotiating forum must be brought together. Something that makes sense in the daily life. That is the job of parliamentarians. The idea, making sense of international law. Working for stronger democracy.
You're aware that there was an informed trial already that I
wanted to Okay. Good morning, distinguished delegates. I would like to apologize for running a bit late, but I'm very pleased to welcome you all to this joint IPU-UN Women Parliamentary Meeting entitled At the Crossroads of Sustainable Development and Gender Equality, the Role of Parliaments. As you know, this year is a turning point for the world's development goals, and it is also a turning point for gender equality. This year gives us every opportunity to rethink the development of countries for the next 10 years. We all know that parliaments were not sufficiently consulted at the time of the definition of the Millennium Development Goals. Today, including through IPU, our voice is raised in the deliberation of the Future Sustainable Development Goals, the SDGs. Our meeting today will help to strengthen our parliamentary voice in the deliberations and decisions of the CSW on challenges and achievements in the implementation of the Millennium Development Goals for women and girls. It gives us also the possibility to reflect together on long-term and discuss our requirements of the SDGs for women and girls. Looking at our agenda of the day, we will begin by taking stock of women's participation in decision-making, which is, as you know, an indicator of the MDGs. In the afternoon, we will look at the role we play as parliamentarians in implementing the MDGs. We will have the opportunity to look back at what our parliaments have done in the past 10 years to meet our country's development commitments. We will, at the end of today, reflect on the place of gender equality in the new SDGs. Dear colleagues and friends, as you see, we have before us a very rich and interesting day, and I would not like to take any further time to begin our work. We have the great honor to have with us both the Secretary General of the IPU, Mr. Anders Johnson, who is here for the last time with us at the CSW as Secretary General. His work can be applauded for all he did in the past and is still doing, and for really setting the vision for gender equality in the IPU. We want to thank you, Mr. Secretary General. Furthermore, we have our very vibrant Executive Director of the UN Women, Madame Phumzile Lambo Nkuka, to open our meeting with some remarks. It is gratifying that we have a powerful lady who have been a former Vice President of the Republic of South Africa. Madame, we are happy to have you with us. Before I give the floor to Mr. Johnson, I want to take this opportunity, as you are soon leaving your position, Mr. Secretary General, to thank you most warmly for your action, your leadership, and endless support to gender equality at the IPU, as well as for your most appreciated friendship. I'm sure that all my colleagues in this room will join me in thanking you and wishing you all the best in your future endeavors. As we say in my country, and as you say in your country of adoption, aluta continua, victoria eserta. Thank you, Mr. Johnson, and we know that whoever takes your shoes have to be really, really entering in the footsteps of a giant. I would therefore like to thank you sincerely and now allow you to take the floor to speak to your wonderful, distinguished members of this audience. Thank you, Mr. Johnson.
Thank you very much, Margaret, Madam Chair. It's a great pleasure to be here today and to be in front of so many distinguished members of Parliament, women and men, most importantly. I'm very pleased to welcome you all, and I'm also very pleased to welcome Madam Phumzile Lambo Nkuka, Executive Director of UN Women. This is the 11th parliamentary meeting that we organize together with the UN on the occasion of the CSW. Since the establishment of UN Women, we do it together with the UN means for us UN Women. It is your first meeting, Madam Executive Director, and of course it's going to be a first of many, I'm sure. The cooperation between the IPU and UN Women is very important. We both need each other. Working together, we can achieve great things, and I'm therefore very much welcome the strengthening of this relationship, both at the national level and at the global level. As you've said, Madam Chair, this year's CSW focuses on challenges and achievements in relation to the MDGs. It's a time to look back, but it's also a time to look forward. And the title of our meeting, which has to do about the role of Parliament at the crossroads of sustainable development and gender equality, I think gives a very clear hint to that. You will be debating over this day. I don't presume to tell you what the outcome will be, but let me share, I think, five messages. And I think the first one that I would say is maybe the most obvious, and that is that there can be no development of our societies without gender equality. Women are key actors of development. Investing in their empowerment must be and is at the core of any progress. Realizing gender equality is not merely about realizing a right, it is about being smart. Yes. If you want economic and other types of development, you have to have women as full partners. Secondly, change is possible. If I look back over the last 10 years, only 10 years, we have seen some remarkable progress. In 2005, if we use that as a reference year, 15.7% of the world's parliamentarians were women. Today, there are 21.8%. That sounds not a lot, but when you translate it into percentage terms, it means that the number of women have increased by 40% in 10 years. That's not a small piece. And if we look at the rate of increase last year, if we could sustain that one over the coming years, well, in that case, we will have gender equality at the global level within the next 20 years, within a generation. And that is monumental. We were not talking that language when we had these meetings, the first meeting 11 years ago, which I well remember. In those days, we were saying, this will not happen in our lifetime and maybe not even in our children's lifetime if we continue at the dismal rate as we were then advancing. So I think there is a political shift that we are now starting to see. And we see the same thing also at the executive level. The number of ministers worldwide have gone up by 20% during this same period. The number of countries where there are no women in parliament have gone down. There are only four left. And there is not a single country anymore left where women are legally discriminated against when it comes to participation in the elections. I think there is a very clear message here. We have come a long way, and it is therefore possible to achieve change. The third message is, women's rights are a priority and time is of essence. Yesterday we had a meeting, some of you attended, I'm sure, to discuss the Sustainable Development Goals and CEDAW. We were sure then whether we were asked if is the cup half full or half empty. I tend to think it is always half full, but I know it is not a very clear answer you can give to this question. What is clear, though, is that despite the progress to which I have just referred, we still face enormous challenges. Women's rights are not respected. Their autonomy is often limited. Their personal development is not secured. And this is a major impediment to the development of our society. We cannot talk about development if women do not have land rights, if they cannot have access to credit, if they cannot have access to health care and reproductive health, if girls are forced into marriage, and if women are excluded from the processes where decisions are taken. So ensuring that women's rights are respected remains one of the key challenges ahead to our societies and to development in general. It will require political will, and it will require enforcement, it will require lawmaking, it will require an effort throughout society. And time is of essence. There is a former minister who used to say that when women's rights do not move forward, they are not simply not just standing still. In fact, they are losing ground because society moves forward. So we need to make sure that women move forward. The fourth lesson, I think, is that women's voice must be heard and must be listened to. We need to listen to women. They need to be actors of their own destiny, and you have to have the power to decide for yourself. So when we define the next development goals, women must have their say and their voices must be listened to. The processes, whether they are international, global, or national, in setting these goals, have to be inclusive, they have to be transparent, they have to be consultative. And the last point that I like to make is that Parliament itself is an actor of development. Mm-hmm. We have been, for the last 10 years, we have been working a lot with parliaments, and we have been encouraging all parliaments to address the MDGs. And one of the lessons that we have learned is that goals will not be achieved if the actors who are responsible for reaching them do not have the appropriate means, power, knowledge, or capacity. And this is true of parliaments as well. If the institutions of the state do not function, citizens will not receive the services to which they are entitled. So good development requires democratic governance. It requires strong parliaments. Over time, we have seen parliaments assuming a more proactive role in addressing the MDGs, and we have worked side by side with many of them. But when we define the next generation of development goals, in our view, we must already look at the next step and take into consideration the importance of providing support to parliaments. So, to sum up, a key to success is political will and partnerships. We need to mobilize the actors, such as members of parliament. Mm-hmm. We need to build partnerships between parliaments and civil society, between men and women members in parliament, between partners that support parliaments, that includes young women and the IPU. Since you did say that this is my last meeting as Secretary General of the IPU, let me add that over these years, 16, that I have been with this organization, I've also drawn another lesson, and that is that you need to, organizations will not change by themselves. There is a lot of organizational inertia. You have to force change in organizations. And within our organization, the ones who have done that have been the women. There were not very many women 15, 20 years ago in the IPU. Today, women, when the IPU meets, are at least 30% of the participants. And that did not come of itself. It came because the organization instituted measures to make sure that delegations include women, to make sure that countries make it possible for women to become elected to parliament, and to make sure that all bodies within the IPU include women at all levels, including at the decision-making levels. We have therefore instituted a whole series of the same kind of legislative measures, quotas and others, that we are suggesting that parliaments and countries do as well. And I think that we can say within the IPU that we have today an organization that is very sensitive to gender, that is trying to mainstream gender and gender equality in everything it does. It is not treated as a subject apart. It is something that underpins all our work. And I think that, as I said, the ones who have made that possible are the women. So a great thank you to all the women parliamentarians in the IPU. With these few words, thank you very much. And I wish you very fruitful deliberations.
Thank you very, very much, Mr. Secretary General, for your inspiring statement. And as you can see, Gertrude Mongella said in 1995, women hold half the world, but not half the power. We have made strides, but with male partners like the Secretary General, we have moved forward. And eventually, as we said, we are going to reach the 50-50 equality within this world. Therefore, I would like to once again thank you. And as we said, we wish you well in your future endeavors. And please don't get tired of us. We will stay in touch with you, and we will call on your expertise and tap from your knowledge from time to time. Thank you, Mr. Enders. I would now like to thank Madam Executive Director once again for really gracing us with your presence. We know you have a heavy schedule. We once again want to congratulate you for your leadership and for the change that we can see throughout the world. When it comes to UN Women, we know that indeed we have a mother institution within the United Nations taking care of its women, men, and children, but more in particular, it's women and children. Thank you so much, Madam. We are grateful to have you here. We appreciate the wonderful cooperation we have with UN Women, and we are eager to see further growth within our relationship. I now hand you, Madam Executive Director, the floor to address the distinguished gathering. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for that kind introduction. I'm also delighted to join you, honorable members and distinguished guests and friends today. I'm delighted to join my colleague, Anders Johnson, the Secretary General of the Interparliamentary Union, to open this year's Parliamentary Day during CSW. I'm very thankful to your leadership. I'm very thankful for the relationship that we have had between UN Women and the Interparliamentary Union. Although this is the first time I've had the pleasure of sitting up here, as you said, it is actually the 11th time that UN Women and IPU have co-hosted this Parliamentary Day on this occasion of the CSW. I hope that there will be many, many more years like this to come, where together we'll be ticking the changes that we are making together. So I wish you well in your endeavor. I have a feeling that we're going to be coming back to you for one thing or the other many times. And, of course, being in this audience today also makes me feel that I'm amongst colleagues, because I have been part of this institution, and I have a lot of confidence in the role of politics and politicians in making the world a better place, notwithstanding some of the challenges that we face of image around the world. I know that it is through politics, lawmakers, that we are able to make changes that hold, yes, where people can be held accountable, where citizens have got recourse. The increase of women and gender-sensitive men in the legislature is one of the most important developments, and it is one of the game changers. Because if I look at some of the legislations that we have seen in our countries, especially in the last 13 years, it is really something that some decades ago you'd not even have imagined, and of course the impact that it has had. You are the ones responsible for passing legislation that aims for improvement in education, in health, in service delivery of all kinds, and of course in gender equality. You are the biggest hope we have for the long-awaited and overdue changes that the world needs in order to attain gender equality. You are also responsible for ensuring that governments are held to account for comparing promises made to service delivered, your voices, the concerns of your constituencies, and to ensure the interests and the needs of men and women, girls and boys are considered in every decision we make and in every country. Even though, as we speak now, one in five parliamentarian is a woman, I must say we have not yet reached the tipping point, but however, we've got a critical mass, and that is important. It is, we have people that can enable us to make effective and big and bold changes, because it is not always going to be the numbers, even though numbers absolutely important, but it's the quality of the people that we send to Parliament. It also means, therefore, when we identify parliamentarians, when we identify women where there is quotas, we've got to pay attention to the quality of the people that are serving, as well as support people once they are in those positions. Okay.
Sorry.
The video decided. Okay. Today, we are therefore here considering challenges and achievements in implementing the MDGs, which have served in many countries as a framework on which sustainable development decisions have hung. You, as parliamentarians, are key partners in these decisions, and it is vital that your voices be heard today, not only to look back at what has worked, but also to look forward at what will work even better in the next phase of the international development agenda. Let me just highlight some points that I think are important. The MDGs might have shined a spotlight on gender equality, but progress on these targets has been slow and uneven. But nevertheless, the information it has generated and where we have been able to make some changes, that has been very important, and it makes us even better prepared for the next phase. Women, for instance, who we have identified as the biggest change makers and the evidence is there for all of us to consider out of the MDGs. Something that maybe we knew intuitively from Sixth Sense, which doesn't have a lot of credibility scientifically, but we've always known that women are the significant change makers, in that when there is equality for women, there will be progress for all. What the MDGs have done is to provide conclusive and overwhelming evidence in that regard. So there is no reason why anyone can doubt the importance of entrenching and embedding women in every aspect and endeavor of life, because through women, you'll be able to get thoroughgoing changes. And of course, the fact that women have been in the struggle for equality and empowerment for over 100 years, really, this has been one of the battles that has been fought for a long time. We've therefore reached a point now where the steps that we need to take really need to be bolder. It cannot be baby steps. It has to be significant steps that will take us to an era where every woman, girl, no matter who they are, no matter where they are, can actually feel that we exist. Women in different parts of the world must know that there is a United Nations, there are parliamentarians, and these people are in my corner. My life will be better. I can feel, I can touch the change because of the people that we elect to power. Each day, for instance, each one of us sitting in this room, we've learned some lessons in the MDGs, in the implementation, because I know you have been monitoring in your country. Sharing these lessons also is very important, because in that way, you are able to ensure that your colleagues, your peers in other parts of the world are able to draw from both your mistakes as well as your successes. We also know that in many of the countries, resources might have been an issue. But we also know that there are many countries where, despite limited resources, people have been able to make outstanding changes. And again, we need to learn about those lessons. I and everyone at UN Women are very excited by the fact that we're sitting here looking forward at Beijing Plus 20. We are sitting here looking forward at the post-2015 agenda. And of course, we are sitting here also looking at the milestones that have come out of the MDGs. I therefore want to urge you in your countries to be part and parcel of the process that we are encouraging countries to undertake, that of evaluating the 20 years of the implementing of the different key themes out of Beijing. We are asking countries to take about 12 months and each month to review a theme out of what was in Beijing, or whatever other mechanism that you may decide. But important thing is that within a year, you should be able to bring us information about the lessons from your country, what has worked, what has progressed, what are the gaps, and more than anything else, to invigorate and re-energize the commitment, and as well as tell us what are you going to do differently going forward, because all of that is going to be critical for us going forward to 2015. And the IPU has also told us that women represent just under 22% of parliamentarians globally. In 15 years, this is about an 8% increase. It is an increase, so we have to celebrate that, but I corner. We need to be pushing, because yes, it might take us 20 years to reach that, but I don't have 20 years.
Yeah.
I really think that this is one era where we hopefully can do it a bit quicker. Mm. But having said that, what is also important is the changes that we will be bringing about in our society, because we are the mirror. You are the mirror. I have an identity crisis. I keep on saying we. You are the mirror of society as parliamentarians and elective representative. And through you, you should be able to then shine the image that you represent on your nations, on your community, and project these changes. We've also seen modest increase of heads of state. And one that we celebrate right now is that of Madame Bachelet, who, as you know, was my predecessor. As we speak now, she is ascending to the high office in her country, and this is something that we have to celebrate. So as we reflect on where we are today, I also encourage you to consider how we can more effectively engage with three specific groups to further our cause in addition to yourselves. Firstly, the young people. Because most of the time when we talk about women, we talk amongst ourselves, not so young women. But I can see in this room there's a lot of younger women, so that we celebrate. But we need to go even to our teenagers, to our school children, to our young professionals. They need to become the people that are holding the baton and are actively participating in the struggle for the emancipation of women. Men and boys. That is another half of humanity that for some reason we have not engaged effectively in the struggle for women's emancipation and empowerment. Mm. Yes, we have gender-sensitive men, and I'm sure some of them are in this room, but we have not effectively actually gone out in a very dedicated way to mobilize and to win men. When you are a lawmaker, when you are a parliamentarian, clearly it is a responsibility to be gender sensitive, yes, because you are responsible for resources of the state, mm-hmm, that must be enjoyed by all the population in a manner that is meaningful for all of them. However, when we go out of society, we have to mobilize ordinary people, ordinary men, to be on the right side of history. And that, at UN Women, we are making it one of our priorities. We just don't want to see women taking the responsibility and shouldering this big burden by themselves. We want to make sure that the struggle is inclusive. We therefore launched a campaign called He for She. Mm-hmm. In that campaign, we are asking men to stand up, to speak up. Firstly, to go into our website and upload their own views, their own commitment, but more than anything else, to be visible in your community and to make changes and to support activities that have to do with the emancipation of women. In the 3 days that we've launched this campaign, because we launched it on the 7th of March, 18 million people have logged into our website, wow, in order to check and to identify. This is something that is truly phenomenal. But clearly, there are billions of men. So yes, 18 million is still a drop in the ocean. So we urge you also to make sure that you encourage men and boys in your community, in your constituency, to stand up and be counted. And we want leaders, yes, also to stand up, as much as we want ordinary men, ordinary boys, to be able to take a stand. So in the next year, we would be hoping that also we will be interacting with the media, a very important constituency, alongside youth, alongside men and boys, to also take some responsibility for bringing about these changes. Because while in Beijing, we had focused on the issue of media, in the MDGs, we did not focus on the issue of media. And in the process, we lost a moment to make sure that we get the media to take responsibility for bringing about the changes. We've also not been able to, in our mobilization, to always I find the resources that support the women's struggle. So we remain with a gap in terms of the resources and the support of women. And because you are leaders in your countries, please make sure that you encourage the support for women's work and the resources that support women's organization. I want to end this by highlighting the importance of supporting the gender goal that we are proposing for post-2015. We are hoping that you will be able in your countries to support and to encourage your delegation to take a stand on this. We are proposing that in the post-2015 dispensation, we have a goal that will focus on women. In that goal, we would like to see critical focus on aspects of women's development, women's rights, as well as women's empowerment that can affect the changes that we desire. One, we want it to focus on violence, like ending violence against women. This is the most dehumanizing form of discrimination that women experience today. The fact that one out of three women will experience sexual and physical violence in their lifetime is an indictment on all of us as humanity. This is something that we want to fight against, and we will need you to be there. The second focus in the goal is on changing the structures that sustain patriarchy and all that comes with it. Changes that addresses the barriers to women's empowerment and gender equality, the legislation, the reproductive rights, the access to land, access to capital, and all of those things that continuously entrench gender oppression. And then the last part of what we are proposing in the gender goal is support for women's leadership. Participation and influence, something that falls directly into your corner. We would like you, therefore, to embrace this goal and to look at these different areas. In addition to that, we see the importance also in the next dispensation to have women entrenched in all the other goals so that we are able to measure and to track the changes that are going to happen, whether we are talking about energy, whether we are talking about health, whether you're talking about education, and we should have indicators and targets that must spell the change that we are looking for. We hope that through that, we'll be able to take the change bottom up and bring it to the top, as well as top bottom. It will meet somewhere in the middle. As someone who come, and the two of us who come from countries that experienced apartheid, yes. We were able to defeat South Africa and Namibia apartheid because of international and global solidarity. People, whether they were politicians, whether they were heads of state, whether they were soccer players, whether they were school children, took a stand. Whether they were business people, they took a stand in their own country, in their own sector, to bring about the changes. That is how we saw the changes. We urge you to make sure that you take this campaign for women in the same manner and make sure that the first part, the early part, the first quarter of the 21st century changes the lives of women forever. I thank you.
Thank you very, very much, Madam Executive Director. In South Africa, a woman would have said to her, "Nkosi, mama." Thank you so much for that powerful and inspirational exchange you had with us. We are indeed delighted to have somebody of your caliber, and we are happy. And as you said, we need to take giant steps. And surely, on behalf of this August gathering, I can assure you, definitely there is no way that we will not support that goal in the MDGs. We are together, IPU and UN Women, and we are going to ensure that we will go further. As we could see, she has left her profession to follow her passion, and that's why we are going to reach there. Thank you so, so much, Madam Mlambo Ngcuka, for this comprehensive statement. Certainly, this will guide our debate, and we know, colleagues, that Mr. Johnson and Madam Mlambo Ngcuka has got very busy agendas, and we want to thank them once again and give them a round of applause, and we thank them for the presence here, and we would now excuse them to attend to the other very important agendas that they have for the day. Let's
thank you so much, and good luck for the rest of the delegation.
Thank you so much. God bless.
Thank you very much. Thank
you so much. I will now have a few household announcements as we are going through, distinguished colleagues. Before we begin our discussion, allow me to make these general points on the organization of our debates. We know that, thank you, and I would like to welcome the panelists as we are going along. You're most welcome.
Hello.
Yes. So while they are coming and moving up here, I would just like to say, first and foremost, you will see that, unlike in other meetings, there's no country flags. You can sit anywhere you feel comfortable, and then from there you speak. After the presentations that we will have, because our meeting's aim is to provide a parliamentary perspective to the CSW topic, and it contributes to the work of the United Nations and its deliberations on the theme, Challenges and Achievements in the Implementation of the Millennium Development Goals for Women and Girls. I therefore hope that we will be able to identify key messages and recommendations that we would present to the CSW plenary when our report on our meeting. Our discussion will be launched by a presentation from by a video. Okay. We apologize. We wanted to show a short video, but unfortunately we have some technical problems. So we will proceed, and our discussion will now start by the launch of the presentation from panelists, whom I would like to thank for their presence and contribution. In terms of proceedings, we will hear the presentations for each session and then open the floor for debate. So I would like distinguished delegates to identify, because there are no country plates, to identify yourself when you press the button, when I give you the floor, introduce yourself, and then please proceed. However, I would like to humbly request sincerely that if you have anything in writing that you would like to share, please provide it to the secretariat and they will be able to distribute it. But let us, for today's discussion, in order to help with our report, listen to the presentations of our distinguished panelists and then ask for clarity, and you can make contributions towards that and recommendations that we can carry forward. We would really appreciate that. The speeches of the panelists will be made available as we go along during the day, and we would like to thank the secretariat in advance for that. Already available documents are found at the table there at the entrance, including recent publications, and I would like to draw your attention to the IPU analysis of progress and setbacks of women in Parliament for the year 2013. Let us please each take a copy and look into it so that back home in our parliaments we can share it with the rest of the world within our countries. This analysis will give you very interesting highlights on how fellow women have made it in parliamentary elections that took place last year. It will be interesting for us to follow. You will also find in the room the unique and most useful map of women in conference there as you enter at the door. It really is something that creates a vision for all of us of where women are. The map is set out clearly within the whole world. Please carry along and share with your colleagues at home too. I look forward to hearing more information on the findings of both the analysis of progress and the setbacks of the map in the coming IPU presentation on women in politics, which is still coming. Before that, I would like to inform you that the IPU and the Permanent Mission of Ireland to the UN are organizing a side event on Wednesday, that is tomorrow, on the challenging world of women in politics. The side event will be held from 10 to 11:15 in Meeting Room D in the UN Conference Building. The side event will be in English only, as the rooms do not allow for interpretation. Additional information can be found at the back of the room. Please, let's make our way early in order for us to have a seat, because indeed these rooms are very small and the demand for people to sit and listen is very high. Thank you so much. Now let us turn to our agenda. Our first session is on the progress made over the past 10 years in women's participation in decision-making in different sectors. We will take stock of women's participation in politics and also of women's participation in decision-making in the corporate as well as in the media, two very important segments. And it's important that the executive director of UN Women also identified a few minutes ago the role of media, which is not really highlighted within the MDGs. So therefore, it's very important that we highlight on that issue and that we give our contribution towards it. Let's begin now, and I'm giving the floor to our panelists for their intervention. And let me begin by giving you the floor to Ms. Zaina. Zaina Halal, who is on my left-hand side from the IPU Secretariat. These are the people that make our work so much more friendly and enjoyable. Thank you very much. Zaina, you have the floor. And as you know, women's participation in Parliament is a key indicator of MDGs on women's empowerment. So let us see what the current situation is. And 10 years after, we have committed to the MDGs. So therefore, let us give Zaina the floor so that she can highlight to us and can all the distinguished delegations please follow, so that from there we take the floor and make our interventions after the final panelists have given their input. Thank you so much. Zaina, you have the floor.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. Maybe we can have the lights.
Can we have the lights off, please?
So thank you very much, Madam Chairperson. As you requested, so we will begin the session speaking of women's participation in politics. The objective of this presentation is for all of us to take stock of the state of women's participation in Parliament, as well as in the executive. My presentation draws on the IPU analysis of progress and setbacks of women in Parliament in recent years, and it draws as well on the map on women in politics that you all have with you now. So let us begin by an overview on women in Parliament. I would like us to look at the past 10 years to compare and draw some lessons. So in January 2014, the average of women in Parliament reached 21.8%. This is up from 15.7% in 2005. So what does this mean? It means that we have a 6.1 percentage point increase since 2005, which is not bad, indeed. And it also means another very interesting thing that we found out this year, and it is that it is the first time that the global average of women in Parliament increases by 1.5 percentage point in a year. And this was in 2013. Before that, the average increase per year was about 0.5 or 0.8 percentage point per year only. So it's interesting to see this trend, and we hope that it is going to further increase. Today, there are 14.8% of women speakers of Parliament. This proportion was only at 8.3% 10 years ago. There are 26.5% of women deputy speakers of Parliament, and I wanted to share this information with you because this is a new feature that the IPU is gathering information on, notably in the map on women in politics that you all have now. So if we look back at the 10 past years and have a close look at the regions, we will find that the progress occurred in all regions. The proportion of progress made is not equal, though, of course. You will see the world progress that I just told you about. If we look at the Nordic countries, the progress was of 2 percentage points. but the proportion is quite high, actually, because we have 42% of women in parliament. I would like to draw your attention in particular to the Arab states, where the increase in 10 years is quite remarkable, although the average of the region is still one of the lowest. But if you can see, the increase was of about 10 percentage points in 10 years. So this is an interesting trend. The regional trends that we registered as of January 2014, and those are results of the elections that were held in 2013, you will see that in the Americas, we now have 25.2% women in parliament. It's the highest regional average in 2013. The increase of the year was 1.1 percentage point. Europe is second, and you will see that there was some, there have been some progress, but also some setbacks in few countries in 2013. The increase was at 1.4 percentage point. Then we have Africa with progress in several countries and an interesting percentage point of 2.1. Increase. Asia saw the least progress in 2013. In the Pacific, we had a slight increase of 0.9 percentage point. And in the Arab states, we had in 2013 the highest annual progress, which is also, again, interesting to see. It was 2.8 percentage point of increase. So this is interesting, and it's mainly due to elections held in Jordan with an increase of women in parliament, but also to the appointment of 20% of women in the Shura Council of Saudi Arabia, which also makes a great improvement at the regional level. So I've put together some highlights of the 2013 elections for you. And today we know that of the 64 chambers that were renewed in 2013, the proportion of women increased in 42. So 42 of the 64. It's quite good. We would like this to be, you know, in all chambers. Hopefully in the soon future. 54 chambers reach the 30% or greater female membership. And this is up from 50 chambers in 2012. 14 of these chambers have passed the 40% mark. So it's one more than in 2012. And two have surpassed the 50% mark. Andorra and, of course, Rwanda, where elections were held this year and brought quite remarkable proportion of women in the House of Deputies with 64% of women. So it's the only chamber where there is a majority of women. The newcomers of 2013 in the 30% club, if I can call it that way, are Austria, Cameroon, Grenada, and Zimbabwe in its both chambers. 21.8% of MPs elected or appointed to parliament in 2013 were women. Let's look at the highs and lows of 2013 elections. So we had a very interesting increase of more than 20% percentage point in Grenada's lower house. So they were around 13%, and now they have 33.3% women. Zimbabwe's upper house, which now has 47.5% women. So this was an increase of 20 percentage points. And another interesting insight was that there was an increase by more than 15 percentage point in lower houses of Saudi Arabia. I told you about it. Cameroon as well. Zimbabwe in its lower house, and Equatorial Guinea. So this is big progress that we achieve in one election, and it's interesting to keep this as an important information out of the 2013 election. Now, if we look at the more setbacks, we have 51 chambers that remain below the 10% mark. It's down, though, from 2012. Five chambers have no women at all in them, and this is, again, down from seven in 2012, but in my point of view, it's still too much. Now, we had a decrease as well in the elections of 2013 in 14 chambers, unfortunately, and no change in five chambers. Kuwait brought back four women, Micronesia, the same, no women, Norway, the same proportion, and Qatar, still until now, have no women in its Shura Council. Let's have a look at women in the executive. So I wanted to share with you the progress and the current situation very quickly. As at 1st January 2014, there are 18 women heads of state or government, or both in some countries. This proportion in 2005, well, there were only 8 women heads of state or government. So you see an increase there. The world average of women in ministerial positions reached 17.2% in 2014, and this is up from 14.3% in 2005. 36 countries have 30% or more women ministers today. 8 countries have no women at all in their governments. And an interesting insight of this year's statistics is that we've seen that portfolios held by women ministers are more diversified today compared to 2005. We have, for example, more women ministers of defense, more women ministers of foreign affairs, compared to 2005, where we had much more women in charge of what these so-called soft portfolios, such as the social affairs or education, for example, which are very important sectors. But nevertheless, we want to see women in other sectors as well. And this year registered an advancement in those terms. The regional average of averages of women in ministerial position 2014, so you have them here. You will see that the Americas are at the top, while the Arab states are the last region in terms of ministerial positions for women. So what are the lessons learned from all of this? And it would be good, Madam Chairperson, dear members of Parliament, if we could have a reflection on this during our discussions. Well, for us, we've seen that once we've confirmed this, what we had already seen before, that mainly quotas are the main measure used to facilitate women's access to parliament. There are more often now included, and this is interesting, in electoral laws than in the past, and this confirms the importance of the legal framework for gender equality in politics. And we know also from the experiences, the diverse experiences, that quotas must absolutely be ambitious. They need to be detailed, and they absolutely need to include implementation mechanisms. Placement, sanctions are among this type of mechanism that are absolutely needed for a good implementation of quotas. electoral systems are key. We've seen that proportional or mixed systems tend to facilitate women's access to parliaments. And this is also something to bear in mind when recrafting the electoral system. Political parties remain the main gatekeepers for women's access to parliament, and this has been the case for a long time now, and it continues. They play a fundamental role in the success or failure of women throughout the process, from candidacy to financing of campaigns, endorsements, access to resources, and to leadership positions. I believe Mr. Mendes-Botta will tell us more about political parties. We've also seen that the political will is absolutely key. It can change everything, as was the Madam Executive Director of UN Women saying. It is determinant, and it has again been confirmed in 2013. I take again as example Saudi Arabia, where by a decision from the king, the proportion of women raised. There are many, many others other examples, of course. We are also seeing changing cultural norms among the electorate. And this is very interesting and something that, you know, women's movements and activists and international organizations have been working towards. There is an evolution in voter confidence that has been confirmed, for example, in Jordan in the election in 2013, where the reserved seats for women were increased by a direct voting from for women outside the quota system. So we can see that, you know, mentalities are changing. They remain, nevertheless, a barrier many, many countries. Parliaments also need to be a place where women want to be. And this is what the IPU is working towards through our Gender Sensitive Parliaments program. I believe you have the publications with you. Parliaments need to transform, to open up for women in order to attract more women interested in taking up the parliamentary career and contributing to the work of Parliament. We've seen this year a lot of coverage, media coverage, on violence against women in the electoral process. And so maybe this is due to the fact that, you know, gender-based violence is being more and more addressed and flagged. But it was interesting from our analysis to see how many cases of harassment, physical violence, threats women have been facing as candidates. And this is an issue that is very preoccupying and that needs to be addressed. So we call your attention on that, fighting stereotypes, and I believe we will also hear more from Mrs. Semela in this regard on women and the media in a few minutes. Madam Chairperson, I don't want to take more time. If you allow me just to ask maybe two questions that could reflect upon in the debate. So I invite you to maybe tell us, if you agree, what are the main remaining challenges for women's participation in politics, and what are the priorities that you think or see should be addressed in the coming years. I thank you very much for your attention. I thank you, Madam Chairperson. I put again the questions, and I would be happy to further discuss these issues with you in a few minutes. Thank you, Madam Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you so, so much, Zeina, for this comprehensive presentation. This information is extremely helpful to inform policy and legislative reform as well as advocacy efforts. You highlighted the importance of political parties as gatekeepers for women's entry in parliament in greater numbers. I believe that our next panelist is going to give us more insights on women's participation in and through political parties. Mr. Mendes Butta, you are a member of the Parliament of Portugal and a member of the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe. We know that you have recently adopted a resolution on political parties and women's political representation, and we are very eager to hear firsthand from you. I now hand you the floor, Mr. Mendes Butta. You have 7 minutes, sir. You have the floor.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairperson. Ladies and gentlemen, even if I wanted, I cannot recall why a long, long time ago I became involved on equality matters. I have to go back to 1985, and I have presented to the Congress of my party a motion for a resolution on strategic political actions of the party that was approved. And in 1985, it was already in that motion, there was a chapter asking for more political involvement of women. I don't know to explain you why. Nobody teaches me, neither in university, neither in the party, and no discussion in the political assembly or whatever, I could have learned from someone about why should it be good for the society that more women get involved in politics. I don't know explain you why I decided many, many years ago to choose Sporting Lisbon as my sporting club. I don't know. Maybe because they have a green jersey. I don't know to explain, and I don't know to explain, but maybe I had this feeling that something was wrong when I was looking to the assemblies, when I was looking to the organs of the party, and only men were sitting over there. And probably I had that, that appeal to change that state of things. Also in 1997, so some 12 years later, and I became every year presenting all the motions, always containing this appeal to the party to have more and more women involved. But in 1997, and I tell you, in Portugal, nobody was discussing equality matters. Nobody was discussing quotas. I never heard about it. But I was candidate to mayor. I've been mayor in my hometown. And my list was 50% men and 50% women. And my deputy mayor, it was a woman. So let me tell you, I did not needed anyone to tell me what to do because this was a natural appeal. If society is composed with half of the society is women and half of society is men, why should not be a reflex on the decision-making situations where the women could be properly represented? So I want to tell you something about my point of view on the political parties and why they are really the great bottleneck, the glass ceiling that is not allowing women to progress more rapidly and more in force to the political positions of decision. Usually I say we give for granted to live in countries, many of our countries, where voters have a free choice and what everybody considers that are free and fair elections. We give for granted to live in countries without opacity, falsification of electoral protocols, without pressure, violation of intimidation of candidates and voters during electoral campaigns. And so imagine such democratic paradises with equal access to impartial, independent and neutral media, with secrecy on the ballot and transparency on political accountability, where everybody has assured the right to vote, including people with disabilities and illiterate. Let's imagine this is happening in all 193 member states of the United Nations. Even if this could happen, and unfortunately it's not happening, very hardly we could say that we live in a full democracy. Maybe we could describe it as a half democracy, as the access of women to political representation is far from being fair and balanced. Parliaments, like our chair has said, parliaments look like mirrors of the political scene on each country. What do we see in these mirrors? We see that women, they represent 21.8% of the parliamentary seats in the world, as Zeina has expressed it very correctly. And I can tell you the example of the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe. Each national delegation has the obligation to include, at the very minimum, one member of the underrepresented sex appointed as a representative. As a result, our Parliamentary Assembly, women represent 34% of the total number of members of Parliament. This figure is quite good and encouraging if compared to the situation in certain parliaments, even in Europe, where only approximately 23% of members of national parliaments are women. However, if we consider each European country separately, this average figure of 23% hides a reality, a huge gap between a handful of countries in which women's representation in parliament exceeds 40%, like Andorra, like Finland, and many other countries in which it's under 20%, like Malta or the Russian Federation, or even under 10%, like the cases of Hungary and the cases of Ukraine. So I would tell you that surely we recognize this is not a single equation and a single solution. There are different paths and speed are different. But we believe, as Mrs. Travosito, the rapporteur in our Parliamentary Assembly that made the report that was already mentioned here, emphasizes in a relevant report, the bottleneck and the glass ceiling lives in the heart of most of the existing political parties in Europe. Yes, quotas might be decisive, but we have to say there are countries without imposed quotas scoring the highest women's participation, and we have countries with quotas who did not achieve the objective of greater gender equality in the political spectrum. Quotas might be indispensable, or even might not be sufficient in need of other complementary measures. There are voluntary quotas assumed by political parties, and there are quotas imposed by law. We find weak sanctions, such as fines, and radical sanctions as exclusion from the electoral process. We have weak incentives as additional subsidies, but let me tell you something that probably many of you never heard. Let me tell you how much I have this conviction that the strongest incentive of all could be additional broadcasting time during electoral campaigns for the parties that achieve the best level of gender balance in their list of candidates. In television, they would do it to appear in television. This would be the real incentive. It's not to give more money. It's not even sometimes to have quotas where the quota is fulfilled at the end of the list. No, if you say you appear more in television, if the list is better balanced, you will see that they will go voluntarily for more equal participation of women in the lists of candidates. But the major problem is inside political parties. A lot of good practices could inspire them to run for the Gender Equality Prize, for instance. We have in our Parliamentary Assembly a Gender Equality Prize for political parties. The political parties that most contribute to the gender equality in all domains of public life, not only inside the political party, but also in the organs, in the institutions of the democracies. So this prize is starting by changing their candidate selection bodies. This is what is the problem. The parties have candidate selection bodies, usually controlled by men that tend to choose other men. Political parties, they need to attract more women to politics, giving them the opportunity to be protagonists in equal opportunities such as men. Women can be promoted by political parties by creating internal women structures, developing mentoring and training programs, improving women's media skills, sharing broadcasting time during campaigns, and this is very important for women in politics, reconciling political activities with family responsibilities. Formal commitments by political parties regarding gender equality are important, but they are not enough. political leaders, they might play a relevant role on gender mainstreaming in their camps. Look, the example that was given in the government. There are no quotas for governments. That depends only on the political will of the prime minister. And if we have men that are real leaders, and if they really believe on the advantages of equality of opportunities for women and men, there will be the solution to have more women in politics and to have especially more women in the governments. I also would like to say something about the quotas. In my country, before the quotas, we had very few women in the parliament. But the quota system was implemented not only for the parliament. It was implemented for the local political administration, for the municipalities. And let me tell you, that is where we have to send our seeds. Because now we have thousands of women that started to be members of municipalities, started to be vice mayors and mayors. And now we have a full range of women that are implicated on politics. They are learning from the bottom. They are learning from the base. That argument that we used to hear, that there are not enough women to come into politics, to the parliament. Oh, they are not involved. They don't want to get involved. That argument is past. It's not anymore being applicable, because after we have quotas also on the municipal assemblies and municipal executives, we have a lot of women that are implicated in politics. And that is where we have to start. Sometimes we speak about the objectives of the Millennium Development Goals. And this was also something we can compare, because we should not make objectives starting from the top to the base. We should make objectives starting from the base to the top. And that's how it works. And this is working in reality in my country, and I believe in many other countries. So to finish, and to not go to extending too much those 7 minutes you gave me, Madam President, I just would like to tell you that I do not believe that talent has a gender. Intelligence has no gender. But equality of opportunities is far from being achieved by political parties. Imagine how much it could be a different world. Maybe one day, sooner than later, imagination might be true. And that half democracy that I mentioned in the beginning of my speech would become a full democracy, hand by hand, together, men and women, building a better world and a better future. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very, very much. In my country, we would have said, wow. Thank you very much. We are very happy, Mr. Mendes-Botha, for your intervention. It really, you have set the tone and the example of what gender-sensitive men should do and what political parties and politicians should do in order for us to develop. We certainly see that it is crucial for political parties to open up by all means to women and to gender equality. Thank you so, so much. I would now like to take this opportunity to give to our third panelist, she have to go. So when she finish, if there is really somebody who have a question for her before she leave, I would grant you that opportunity before we move to the fourth panelist. I now turn to the media sector, and I also know the great role, and we all know the great role played by the media today, and we now, and the impact that media have on people's behavior and perceptions. And therefore, how are women making it into decision making in this crucial sector? Giving us guidelines on how to do this, I'm very pleased to give the floor to Mrs. Mari Semela, the Development Director of International Women's Media Foundation, to tell us more about the subject. Madam, you have the floor.
Thank you very much. You know, we're storytellers in the media, and when I was 17 years old, I was on my way to go see a play with a friend when my parents' car started steaming. The radiator wasn't very good, and so we had to stop at a gas station, and when we went into the gas station, the guy said, you know, you really might want to hear this. Well, the President of the United States was resigning, and he was resigning because the media had exposed him. It was a really powerful lesson for me at that age. And so with all due respect to politics, we can undo your progress in the media if just simply because of the power of storytelling. The International Women's Media Foundation was founded about 25 years ago. So I don't have a lot of statistics about the progress that we've made in 10 years. Just about 5 years ago, we produced the first global study of women in the media. And the story is bleak. About three-quarters of media is run by men around the world. And I'm really pleased that you guys put decision-making into the title of this session, because when you look at TV or you read the bylines in a newspaper, you might think that a lot of women have gotten into the media, and certainly it's somewhat improved. But they're probably not making the decision about what the news is. The owner of the media organization is making the decision, or possibly an editor. So there really are many layers in the media for decision making. I want to talk to you about it in three different ways. Because I think there are three different ways that governments and citizens can really be involved in bolstering up the role of women in the media. The first is equality and leadership. And, of course, that's in the newsroom. We need to be able to get the same positions that men do. But, again, the basic numbers are that three-quarters of the decision-making roles of men are in the hands of men right now. The second, security, is very important, and for some of the reasons that were cited up here already, for women who are brave enough to become involved in areas where they have not previously been, there is quite a bit of sexual harassment and flat-out danger. When we recently did a report on security for women in the media, we discovered that fully a fifth of them have undergone serious assault in the field while they're trying to do their jobs. Another significant portion have also experienced harassment in their workplace with people that they're actually working with. So imagine a woman who's being sexually harassed in the newsroom is not likely to be put into a position of decision-making in that same newsroom simply because she's seen as vulnerable, et cetera, and not as powerful. So those two things, the leadership and our positions, become really very, very much entwined with the notion of security. And the third is ownership. Right now, there's probably have never been as much of an opportunity for women to become involved in ownership in the media, because the media is changing as we speak with the advent, of course, of the internet. So that's a good news, bad news thing. Because if you look at the number of dollars that go towards women who want to start their own ventures, 3 to 5% of venture capital goes to women who want to start media organizations. And that's generous. That's a generous assumption. On the other hand, these organizations can be launched at a fairly low cost. So we are working with the Ford Foundation to actually launch women's media organizations just at $3 a year. It's an expensive thing. And they've been able to carve out really interesting spaces for themselves. What's important about that, and what's important about women in politics, is that then women's stories begin to be told from our perspective. We begin to control the story. And once you control the story, you can really begin to influence cultures and change things, particularly in the areas of gender. So if you leave with anything from my statement today, I want you to leave with those three things in mind. We need equality in the newsroom. We need security to do our jobs. And we also need to begin to be owners in that space. Now, if the ownership is the final answer to these numbers beginning to change in a real way, then we have to remember where those ownership opportunities are, and that leads us to another sector. The opportunities now are definitely in cyberspace and on the internet. However, the climate for women in the tech area is still a real serious problem. In fact, that's one of the areas we see around the corner as very, very dangerous for women, and that is digital cyberspace. Women can be shamed online. Their stories can become not credible if they are personally attacked. So to protect women's story, to protect the message that's going to send women into parliament, that's going to send women into the editorial chair, we've got to begin to think about equality, security, ownership. And we've got to push back in those areas like the technical world where women aren't welcome. How often as you begin to, you know, as you're going to your conferences and that sort of thing and people are talking about media and the internet, you'll see white men basically telling the story and controlling that arena. And so I'm really pleased to be up here with my colleagues who are working on women in politics. I actually did that for many years myself and worked with Marie Wilson, who's worked on that issue here in the United States. And one of the fears she had when she got into the business was that the story that was out there about women in politics was their husbands, their hemlines, and their hair. And it wasn't what their policies were. You know, so as you think about politics for women, as you think about the media for women, think about how important it is to tell our own story. You'll see as you look at the Global Report, I left several copies of the executive summary, but I also left my card. Anyone who contacts me, I'd be happy to send you a physical copy of the Global Report. It's also online on our website, and then you can search it for your region, your particular country. You know, the regional indicators very much follow, I think, what policies for sexual assault. If a government is strong on that, there isn't as much sexual assault in the newsroom. Where women have more liberty, you'll find more women in the media. I don't think there will be a lot of surprises in this report. We do, however, plan to continue our research. In 2015, we plan to redo this report, and then I can come back and tell you about what progress we've made. We're also going to be trying to draw some causal relationships. If there are more women in decision-making roles in the media, does that mean that there are more meaningful stories about women in the media? It's important that we hear about sexual assault and gender-based violence in the media, but are we also hearing the positive stories coming out of countries where women are oppressed? Are we hearing about the amazing cheese-making in the Eastern Congo that I have some colleagues there right now who are working with reporters to bring out these positive stories so that people around the world can begin to get a better view of what women are actually doing and how much they can contribute if they are at decision-making levels all over the world. So I'd be happy again to entertain any questions on my way out. I'm very sorry that I have to leave. Contact me anytime by email. We really want to begin working more with you guys. You know, it's an important field, and we believe we can make an impact. 25 years ago when we launched, I don't think we expected to be around anymore. I think we thought it was just one of those doors that was going to open for women, and, you know, we'd be welcome and we'd have an influence very quickly. In fact, it hasn't gone that way, and there aren't very many encouraging indicators of advancement. But there's certainly the potential, and we control that potential to some degree by our willingness to go into this field. Anyhow, thank you very much. I really appreciate that you decided to include the media in this conversation.
Thank you very, very much. We thank you very much, Mrs. Samela. And I would now like to give the floor, please, distinguished delegates, only because I will rule you out of order if you ask to any of the other panelists. I just want somebody on this particular issue on the media, if there's anybody really with a question, so that we can allow Madame Samela to leave if there's nobody who have a specific question for her. I will allow questions only to her on the media. Any distinguished delegate? Yes, yes, I have one there at the back. Madam, please take the floor and introduce yourself, please. Triple 1-2.
Hello.
Yes, please go ahead. I think your microphone is not properly on. Yes. We can't, excuse me, my apologies, madam.
She can ask her the question directly, no.
Yeah, we can't hear you.
It's okay.
It is fine. Yes, there it's on.
Wait,
Yes, please go ahead.
Right, last time. My name is Khatija Bardet-Wood. I'm from the UK. I'm a founding member of an organization that empowers Muslim women called Iman. A question to Madame is, you have not given us your email address. We would appreciate your email address, please.
Yes, please. Yeah. They will give it?
Yes.
We will get it at the end or must give it?
The business cards are
okay. Thank you very much. Madame, the business cards of the panelists are at the entrance. So you will be able to get her business card at the entrance and get the email address on there. Thank you so much. We will now allow Madame Samila to take leave and to attend to her other schedule. Thank you so much. There's another question here. I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
It's okay. I think you can do it through the email, Madame, because she's already left. Thank you so much. I would now like to turn to our fourth panelist, Madame Kristin Asgeirsdottir, the director of the Icelandic Center for Gender Equality. And she will tell us how the Icelandic government has decided to address gender inequality in corporate boards. It is encouraging to see that after the many debates on women's participation in decision-making in politics, there are now more and more debates on women in executive boards of public and private companies. Many governments and parliaments are now looking closely to how women's participation in corporate boards can be increased. In France, a law was passed in 2011 to establish a 40% quota for women in large publicly traded companies. Austria introduced a quota of 25% women in companies that have a state-shared ownership. This quota will be increased to 35% in 2018. In Brazil, the Senate, in discussing the inclusion of a quota of 40% women in state and mixed capital enterprises. In India, the Lok Sabha passed a companies bill that requires public companies to have a minimum of 3 directors, one of whom should be a woman. In Malaysia, the cabinet approved a policy where corporate companies must achieve at least 30% participation of women in decision-making positions in the private sector. All interesting and promising measures, but are quotas the only way to address inequality in this field, or are there other measures that can be considered? Madame Asgeirsdottir, the floor is yours. Please give us more insight into Icelandic experience in addressing gender equality in corporate boards. You have 7 minutes, Madame. The floor is yours.
Thank you. Is this working?
Yes.
Thank you very much, and thank you for inviting me to this meeting of IPU. I was a Member of Parliament myself for 8 years for the Women's Party in Iceland, because it took a Women's Party to raise the number of women in my country. There was no discussion about quotas at that time. But I first and foremost want to tell you about laws or acts on quotas in my country, Iceland. And as you may know, Iceland has been at the top of the World Economic Forum's list on the gender gap. We can criticize that kind of measurement, but we are quite proud of it and want to keep that seat. But as has been mentioned here, developments, they go both up and down. And if I had been here a year ago, I would have told you that in my country, the prime minister was a woman. The members of the government were 50-50, men and women, and women were 43% of the parliamentarians. Now women are only one-third of the government, and the number of women in the parliament did go down by 3%. So these things can happen. Mm-hmm. But anyway, in Iceland we have 3 legislations on quotas. The first one is the Act on Gender Equality, Article 15, which says that on all public boards, committees, and councils, the number of either sex, either gender, cannot be less than 40%. And this law was passed in 2008. So we have some years of experience. And the law says that the Center for Gender Equality is to gather information about how the ministries are doing. And the Center for Gender Equality publishes a report every year on how the ministries are fulfilling their duties. And I can say that this law, this article, has more or less been respected. There are some committees, some of them very specialized, where we have to accept that specialists of either men or women, they cannot be found. But that is a reason that the law accepts. What is more interesting is that in 2010, the Parliament passed two amendments to legislation, one on corporate boards or corporate companies, private corporate companies with 50 employees or more. 50 employees or more. And these companies, they have to have at least 40% of either men or women on their board. And the companies had 3 years to apply to this to the law. And we have seen progress. The figures are going up. Now on the 1st of September, these changes took effect. And so now in the next few coming weeks, most of the companies are having their annual meetings. So then we will see what happens. The last figure that I saw was 30%, that the number of women has gone up to 30%. So it seems that the law is working. There was a lot of resistance, just as in Norway about 10 years earlier. There was a lot of resistance, and the same arguments as Mr. Mendes-Bolte mentioned before, that there were no women were to be found who could take a seat on the board, but this is, of course, nonsense. And women educated in economics or whatever, they have published lists of hundreds of names of women who are ready to take a seat on the boards. And in this way have shown that there are a lot of women. The third act and a very important one is on the pension funds in Iceland. The pension funds are very strong and powerful and very important investors in my country. And it's interesting that there was more resistance among the pension funds than among the corporate companies, saying that this does not apply to us. Well, this is impossible, because we have to represent the members of the funds, just like there were no women members of the funds. Everyone in Iceland has to be a member of a pension fund, so there are about equal numbers of men and women. But this is how the arguments sound. So we are seeing the same development there. The development started very slowly, but it is happening. And I want to tell you that among researchers, there is a great interest for these quotas, how they will work, what effect will they have. And there are two projects starting. Both are looking at either how the companies, how will they find these women, what does it take, and the other one is on the effect, what happens after the quota is fulfilled. Is it just the question of these equal numbers of men and women, or does it really change the how the companies are run? Does it change the company's image, or what is it that happens? And what I have heard from Norway is that the first thing that really changes, it's the company's image. You know, they can say we are a gender-friendly company. We respect gender equality and so on. But it will be very interesting to see what happens. So I cannot yet tell you what the effect is, but what is interesting is that the resistance has almost disappeared. The owners of the companies, they have more or less accepted this and accepted that actions were needed to change things, to push them ahead. What is interesting that the institution that we have had the most problems with or have debates with, it's the parliament, because the parliament says that the quotas, they do not apply to us. You know, we have this political system and the committees, they have to represent the political parties. And this is a debate still going on. The parliament is not willing to accept a quota, inside quota. And just to tell you that there is no legislation on quotas in the political parties. The political parties decide for themselves. And some of the parties have a kind of a quota system or a kind of a rule that women and men have to share the first four or five seats equally. So it's a kind of a quota. So that's what I wanted to tell you. Next year, we in Iceland and in Denmark are going to celebrate 100 years of women's right to vote. And I think that in both countries we are going to use the opportunity to look over our societies and ask important questions about gender equality. Where are we now? Where are we heading? What are the most important issues ahead? And it was interesting to see on the screen that Europe is now in the third seat when we look at the world and members of parliaments in the world. So is Europe slowing down and other parts of the world stepping up? Well, that's okay, but of course we want to do well. So if you have some questions, I'm ready to answer them. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Madam Askerdotter, for your very important intervention. We are grateful, and I will now open the floor for interventions. And please take note that we all need to leave this room for lunch at 1 o'clock, because our interpreters also need to have some lunch. Therefore, let us try to be as short as possible so that we can give more people the opportunity to make their interventions. And we know that we normally talk about the issue of politics, but on the issue of the media and so on, we are not so into it. So let us give more attention to those two topics as presented by the panelists. You will just indicate by showing of your hand, and then you will press the button once, and you will introduce yourself so that when the panelists have to respond, they know whom to respond to. And please, let us not make it more than 2 minutes.
If they want the floor, they need to press. And then it comes here.
Yes. I already said if you want to the floor, but let us not all press at the same time. That's what I know. That's why I said indicate, and then I will indicate, and then you press the button so that you can have the speaker on. Otherwise, all the buttons will go on at the same time. So I will start on my right-hand side, and then we will move to the left-hand side. So if you will bear with me, I would like to start over here. Just the first lady, press your button, please. Yes.
You already had people before. Yeah, it's my order.
Muy buenos días a todas y a todos.
Okay, sorry, technology. Okay. I was just corrected now. My apology to you, madam. As you press, the numbers appear here in front of me. So I will call the number. Just check on in front of you your number appear, because we'll go according to the precedence of order as you have indicated. But let me now start with 1210. The person sitting at 1210, you have the floor. Just look at your number and then proceed, press your button. The others are there. I will give Zena to explain. I have I have the as you are pressing, don't worry, you press and then it appears in front of me. So I'll give you a chance once the first person is finished. Zeina, please explain further.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. When you press the button, you join a list that is being drawn automatically. So, Madam Chairperson, has your number on the list. You need to press the button only once. You don't need to raise your hand. So you're all on the list now. Okay?
Yes.
Thank you very much.
You have pressed the button. You're on the list, so don't worry. Just press the button and then you leave it. Then I will call you. So
that was the first one that was already finished. It was 10...
10:16.
No, the one it disappeared. It was 10:12.
It's okay.
Okay, let's go to 10:16. I know I said 10:12,
yeah,
but
yeah.
It disappeared now.
Thank you.
11:12. No, it's 11:12. I said, isn't it? The first one was 11:12. It was 11:12. Please proceed.
All right.
My apologies.
So should I start? Thank you. My name is Hindel Faiz. I'm a Jordanian member of parliament. I just want to address women in power through this podium that the contribution of the female MP is very high and tremendous. And it's very important to maintain credibility. The problem that we're facing as women when we reach the power is that the moment women reaches power, they lose contact and relation with their constituents, especially when we're talking about parliament. And in order for us to increase the position of having more women in the parliament, it's very important the role of the current woman, the parliamentary woman. Due to the fact that the credibility is very low, you know, the constituents is barely believe that women can be leaders, and the credibility is very low. So I'd like to, it's not a question as much as it's a message through the UN umbrella. Women who reaches this power should make sure that she is a leader, and she should draw more women in the same role. So the most important thing is the relation between the female MP and her constituents. And this is what we're having problem with. I'm with the quota, but unfortunately, just for the first time. The second time, women should succeed in the parliament due to their performance and their relation with their constituents. So mainly what I would like to focus on is that... Unfortunately, we don't have any logistic support. We don't have the financial support, especially what I'm talking about in the third world. Unfortunately, they think that the low performance of the female MP due to the fact that she's not well organized or well connected or powerful enough. But unfortunately, she needs the support. So here, what can you and women do to female MP, especially the logistic and the data and, what sort of support that they can give to the current female MP in order to prove that women in power, they can do much and more than men and to maintain the relation with their constituents and to have more women in power. Thank you.
Next on the list, it's 1204. You have the floor. Distinguished Delegate, 1204. Please proceed and press your button and start speaking. 1204. Okay, if 1204 is not in the room, then I'll move to 1210. 1210. Distinguished delegates, in front of us, our numbers appear. Distinguished delegate from 1210. 1210 not there, I'll move to 1138. When I call your number, please press the button to speak and start speaking.
I do apologize. We have representatives from the UK.
Okay, which number are you, madam? I can't hear you, please. Can you take your seat and speak?
In
led to believe I'm not supposed to ask questions. We have delegations from the IPU UK. Thank you.
Thank you very much. 11:38. Okay, in the absence of 11:38, I'll go to 10:16. Just press the button, madam, and start speaking.
I think it's her. It's okay. 10:13.
10:13.
Muchas gracias. Bueno, yo nada más contribuir a lo vertido en esta sala para aumentar, primero decir que soy senadora de la República por México, mexicana, y que el pasado diciembre hemos aprobado una gran reforma, una reforma de gran calado constitucional para garantizar la paridad en las candidaturas para las mujeres y los hombres. Es decir, 50% de mujeres, 50% de hombres, para ser muy clara y muy específica. Esto nos va a permitir en el 2015 el poder postular todos los partidos a más mujeres y aumentar nuestra participación en la toma de decisiones que son muy importantes para el país y cambiar realidades. Esto garantiza esta paridad, se garantiza ya los derechos políticos de las mujeres, sin embargo, las legisladoras estamos conscientes que tenemos que avanzar mucho más para alcanzar paridad en otros temas, la igualdad anhelada en los temas de empoderamiento de las mujeres y en temas de orden social. En ese sentido, creemos que también es importante para poder garantizar una eficacia y eficiencia en la participación de las mujeres, se requiere de financiamiento para la capacitación política. Y para eso nosotros, por ejemplo, tenemos el financiamiento público en los partidos, el 2% está dedicado como mínimo está dedicado a la capacitación política de las mujeres, de lo que es de todos los presupuestos de los partidos. Nosotros creemos que ahora con esta medida que acabamos de implementar en nuestro Congreso de la Unión, debemos también de aumentar ese presupuesto para la capacitación política de las mujeres del 2% como mínimo al 4% de todo el presupuesto de los partidos. Esa es la experiencia mexicana. Creemos que de pasar del número 19 de la participación en el poder legislativo de las mujeres, en el número 19 global, podemos ascender a los primeros números. Pero no solo es en un ranking de números en lo que queremos, sino queremos también en la calidad de la participación para transformar al mundo. Muchas gracias.
Thank you. Thank you very much, distinguished delegate. I now give the floor to the distinguished delegate number 1066. 1066, please take the floor. Press your button and start to speak, distinguished delegate.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Chung Hee Jeon from Korea. The level of women's participation in the decision-making process varies greatly by nation. There are two main determinants behind such a huge disparity among nations. The first is whether the national leaders view the female workforce as a growth engine, and the second is whether legal safeguards are in place to enable both men and women to maintain balanced work and family lives. Since both of these two requirements have been met, the rate of women in higher-ranking positions in the public sector and large enterprises in high in the northern European countries. In 2012, the Republic of Korea began the era of a female president for the first time in its history. However, the rate of women in executive positions in government organizations and enterprises is among the lowest in Asian countries. The leader hasn't shown a strong will to tap into the female workforce. Out of 1,000 475 high-ranking public officials, only 65 are women, accounting for 4.4%. This figure is a far cry from the reality that women account for over 40% of the entire 990,000 public officials and 40 to 50% of newly hired prosecutors, judges, and diplomats. Currently, the number of women whose careers have been cut short has reached 1.9 million. More than 42% of them left their work due to such reasons as marriage, childbirth, and childcare. This serious career disruption among 30 to 35-year-old women stems from the huge wage gap between women and men, as well as the patriarchal culture of the society. Since work and family life are hard to maintain together, the notion that it's more efficient for women to take charge in childcare and housekeeping is prevalent in society. In order to increase women's advance into the positions of high-ranking officials, the same wage system for women and men, and a flexible work arrangement system that prevents discrimination in favor of regular workers should be institutionalized. Thank you very much.
I'll give the floor to Distinguished Delegate 1017. 1017, you have the floor.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Alhamdulillah wa salatu wa salam ala Rasulillah. اسمي سامية حسن سيد أحمد أنا من السودان ونائب أول رئيس البرلمان العربي شكرا جزيلا سيدة الرئيسة والشكر للإخوة والأخوات مقدمي الأوراق والاتحاد البرلماني الدولي الذي أتاح لنا هذه الفرصة وأولا أريد أن أجيب على سؤال الأخت زينة وأقول لها أن التحديات في تقديري التحدي الأساسي هو الإرادة السياسية والأولويات في تقديري الكوتة هي أولوية وبناء القدرات بالنسبة للنساء السياسيات أو النساء في مجالات العمل المختلفة هي رفع القدرات فلا بد أن ترفع القدرات وإننا في البرلمان العربي نستشعر تماما احتياج أو حاجة المرأة العربية لوجود قوانين وتشريعات تعينها على أن تتقلد مواقع في البرلمان أو في الأجهزة التنفيذية أو في مجالات مختلفة ولذلك نحن الآن في اللمسات الأخيرة في البرلمان العربي لإعداد وثيقة لحقوق المرأة العربية هذه الوثيقة لنا الآن أكثر من عام ونصف بدأنا في الإعداد لها بالتعاون والشراكة مع المجتمع المدني ومع البرلمانات الوطنية ومع ركزنا فيها على الشباب إذ أننا سنعقد ورشة خاصة بالشابات في وطننا العربي ليكون لهم الرأي وتكون لهم المشاركة في هذه الوثيقة هذه الوثيقة نتناول فيها مبادئ عامة في حقوق المرأة السياسية والاقتصادية والاجتماعية والصحية والتعليمية والثقافية وغيرها من الحقوق نريد أن نسهم وأن نلحق نحن نساء الوطن العربي بأخواتنا اللائي سبقونا على المستوى الدولي وعلى المستوى الإقليمي وفي هذه الوثيقة إن شاء الله نهتدي بكل الوثائق والاتفاقات التي تتناسب وتتوائم مع مجتمعنا العربي ومع عاداتنا وتقاليدنا السمحة ولذلك نحن نقول أننا نبشر العالم بأن منظومة المرأة العربية الآن بدت خطوات واسعة في إطار التمكين السياسي وتعزيز النوع الاجتماعي وأيضا في تكافؤ الفرص ونحن في الوطن العربي نتحدث عن تكافؤ الفرص ونتحدث عن العدالة لأننا في تقديرنا أن العدالة هي التي تعزز من مشاركة المرأة أعدادنا كثيرة نعاني من كثير من الحروب والنزاعات ولذلك نسبة النساء في كثير من أوطاننا العربية نسبة عالية جدا المساواة في كثير من الأحيان قد لا تنصفنا ولكن العدالة وتكافؤ الفرص ربما تكون هي المنصف لوضعنا نحن نساء الوطن العربي وإنني يعني في هذه العجالة أريد أن أتقدم للاتحاد البرلماني الدولي ولليو إن ويمن في أن يعينونا بمسائل لوجستية وفنية نحن نحتاج لمعاونة الجميع حتى تخرج هذه الوثيقة والتي إن شاء الله ستقدم لاجتماع القمة القمة العربية في شهر مارس من عام 2015 لتحتمد من قبل رؤساء الدول العربية وغادتها، ومن ثم تنزل إلى البرلمانات الوطنية لاحتمادها، وهي بشارة نذفها في هذا الحفل الكريم. ونحن نجتمع من أجل المرأة في العالم أجمع، لأن منظومة المرأة العربية إن شاء الله ستكون واحدة من المجتمعات ومن الوثائق التي نهديها أيضا لمن تريد أن تهتدي بها. أشكركم جزيلا والسلام عليكم.
I thank the distinguished delegate from Sudan. I now recognize the distinguished delegate from 1198. Distinguished delegate, please take the floor.
Oui.
Merci.
Moi, je suis Denise Boileau du Canada. Je ne suis pas une délégation de pays, mais une délégation syndicale. Est-ce que ça va? Oui, ça va. Moi, ma question, je voudrais savoir si vous avez analysé dans les différents parlements où les femmes sont les plus représentées, à savoir que si les droits des femmes sur la question des programmes sociaux et les services publics ont eu un effet positif vu la plus grande participation des femmes dans ces hauts lieux de décision dans les parlements.
I now recognize the distinguished delegate from 1120. Number 1120. Distinguished delegate, please proceed.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Aisha Osori. I'm from Nigeria, and I run a fund called the Nigerian Women's Trust Fund. It was set up to focus on trying to get more women into government, particularly parliament, and empower them and provide leadership development. I think I've heard today a bit of a debate about quality versus quantity, and I just wanted to point out to Zaina, who gave the first presentation, talking about the upside in female representation, and just to point out that Nigeria actually dropped between the last election cycle and now from 9% to 7%. And one of the reasons, I think, apart from all the challenges listed out, is that we find that the few women who are in parliament want to stay in the boys' club. There's not particularly a connection between the civil society and the voters who are working to get affirmative action and the women in there. And so I'm curious, how do you get the few women who are in there to respond to these concerns? Some people say we should assess them and sort of find a way of preparing some sort of a scorecard for them. But then some other people argue that it's not fair to sort of focus only on the women and not on the men, particularly when in some cases you find that we have more women voters in some parts of Nigeria than others. So for me, I just wanted to get a sense of what's working in other countries. How are people putting pressure on parliament in general to respond to these issues? We've tried severally to change our constitution to get affirmative action. We've worked with the political parties. That hasn't worked as well. So for me, I just wanted to find out what initiatives are working in other countries to put pressure on the people who are in there, particularly the women, without making it seem like it's a witch hunt, but, you know, in a way to sort of increase their efficiency, and so they get buy-in from the voters as well. So a way of balancing that. Thank you.
I thank the distinguished delegate from Nigeria. I now recognize the distinguished delegate from number 1049. 1049, you have the floor, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Katrin Ercey. I come from Hungary, and I have a question about political will. Currently, Hungary is standing at 8%, which is the last among not only EU countries, but in the OECD countries. And there's a conscious, the result, that is a result of a conscious development on both sides of the political arena to keep women under 10%. We'll have elections in April, and both the Speaker of the Parliament and the Prime Minister have several times publicly introduced their opinion that women should stay out of politics because it's too harsh for them. So my question is, what tools the IPU or other international organizations might have to break through that kind of conscious and communicated opinion that, yes, we are going against the trend of what we've seen around the world. We are not ashamed of keeping women out of parliament. How can you raise awareness that it's no longer acceptable? Are you planning to demand sort of report on progress, which is a typical tool for international organizations to measure and encourage countries to take measures? Because if there is no political will, there will be no progress. And if you can do that, as in the case of my country, over 24 years since the transition to democracy, no one will hold these parliaments accountable. So I'm wondering about the tools you can use in that effort. Thank you.
The distinguished delegate from Hungary. I now recognize the distinguished delegate from 1124. Distinguished delegate, you have the floor.
Buen día, Lucía Pérez de México, diputada federal. Me parece muy importante todos los avances que se han mencionado. Quiero compartirles que desde el Congreso de la Unión estamos impulsando que se apoye con mayor porcentaje en los partidos políticos para la formación y capacitación de liderazgos femeninos. Pero me preocupa un tema y quisiera saber si es común en otros países y tiene que ver con la violencia política. Desgraciadamente, inclusive algunas legisladoras, compañeras mías, en sus estados por parte de altos políticos han sufrido burlas, mofas y han sido discriminadas. Creo que es un término que debemos también como parlamentarias avanzar y trabajar en común por erradicar la violencia hacia las mujeres en el ámbito político. Muchas gracias.
I thank the distinguished delegate from Mexico, and I now recognize the distinguished delegate from 1090-1090. You have the floor, distinguished delegate.
Oui, bonjour, Hélène Leblanc, députée et présidente du comité permanent de la condition féminine au Parlement du Canada. J'aimerais mentionner que les quotas fonctionnent au niveau du parti, au niveau des partis politiques. Ce fut le cas au sein de notre parti, mais ça prend, comme il a été mentionné, une volonté politique. Il faut également qu'on aille plus loin, et ça a été mentionné déjà au préalable, c'est-à-dire de faire en sorte que les candidates qui seront choisis soit dans des circonscriptions qu'on peut considérer comme des circonscriptions gagnantes. Également, quand on arrive au sein du gouvernement, qu'il y ait des postes ministériels diversifiés, et c'est ce qui a déjà été mentionné. Il faut également que ce soit un effort collectif, un effort, une volonté politique, mais également de la part des femmes qui ont la chance et le privilège d'accéder à des postes de députés ou de ministres, qu'elles soient par la suite proches de leur communauté, mais également qu'elles démontrent tout le leadership dont on sait qu'elles sont capables. Également, j'ai eu la chance d'avoir des étudiantes de l'université qui m'ont suivie en tant que parlementaire, qui ont passé quelques journées, qui font des stages pour justement préparer la relève, et c'est un effort qui est très important. Ça a un effet d'entraînement. Plus il y a de femmes, plus qu'il y a de chances que les femmes soient représentées. Ce que j'aimerais demander, c'est comment l'Union parlementaire et cette enceinte dans les Nations unies peuvent contribuer à l'effort qui se fait un peu partout et de faire en sorte surtout que les jeunes femmes et les femmes soient intéressées à entrer dans l'arène politique et qu'on puisse de plus en plus faire baisser les barrières qui pourraient les rendre réticentes à s'engager politiquement. Merci beaucoup.
I thank the distinguished delegate from Canada. I now recognize the distinguished delegate from 1014, distinguished delegate, you have the floor. Please proceed.
Bien. Gracias. Gracias, señora presidenta. Me parece que las preguntas que realizó la señora Gilal a esta audiencia es muy importante empatarlas con las mismas preguntas que surgen también de nuestro ponente José Méndez. Es decir, ¿cuáles son los retos, cuáles son las medidas y si estas tienen que basarse en la voluntad, en los incentivos o profundizamos a que sean estructurales? Me parece que ese es uno de los retos más importantes que tenemos en nuestros países. No podemos anticipar como una receta que lo que acontece en un país, el proceso que tiene un país, pueda ser retomado por los otros países. Lo que sí es cierto es que la experiencia nos demuestra que cuando las mujeres se unen, cuando hay una alianza incluso entre mujeres de los diversos partidos y cuando a estas alianzas se suman también hombres progresistas, es fácil incidir, es más fácil incidir en los cambios estructurales. Estos son, sin lugar a dudas, la constitución de cada uno de nuestros países. Por lo tanto, no podemos dejar solamente en el voluntarismo, en la buena fe de los líderes que pueden en su momento determinar que haya o una cuota de género o bien impulsar la paridad en los encargos que tiene bajo su encomienda. Por lo tanto, y siguiendo la experiencia que tenemos en nuestro país, en México, yo soy senadora de la República, presido la Comisión de Derechos Humanos y sin lugar a dudas, las mujeres de todos los partidos políticos en el Senado de la República nos unimos para tener ahora en la Constitución el 50-50. No podemos de ninguna manera dejar pendiente que, aun cuando avanzamos en la integración del Parlamento Federal y los congresos locales y tenemos que poner especial atención en las leyes secundarias, todavía siguen muchos procesos importantes, por ejemplo, en los ayuntamientos, en otros espacios de poder como es el poder ejecutivo o el poder judicial o incluso en la propia iniciativa privada. Avanzar hacia la igualdad sustantiva ha sido gradual en todo el mundo. Así hemos avanzado y creo que es pertinente seguir insistiendo en que es fundamental las alianzas, porque de otra manera no podemos lograr los votos necesarios que nos permitan incidir en los cambios legales. Y cuando son cambios constitucionales, prácticamente estamos hablando en la mayoría de nuestros países de una votación calificada, lo que nos obliga a tener una amplia alianza que permita efectivamente lograr estos cambios estructurales. Por lo tanto, me parece que es importante que en esta reunión trascendamos, y con eso termino, del principio de equidad, que puede ser un elemento importante y vigente en prácticamente la mayoría de los países, a avizorar como un objetivo perseguir la igualdad sustantiva. Es decir, tenemos que cambiar nuestro discurso hacia ser mucho más ambiciosas en la persecución de la paridad, de tal manera que tenemos que proponernos como parte de nuestras agendas pugnar por la igualdad sustantiva para que podamos avanzar más rápidamente en lograr la incorporación igualitaria de mujeres y hombres en los espacios de poder. Es cuanto. Gracias.
I thank very much the distinguished delegate from Mexico. I would like to indicate that I have now closed the speakers list and others who did not get the chance will get a chance in the afternoon. I now give the floor to the distinguished delegate from 1018-1018. You have the floor, distinguished delegate. Please go ahead, madam.
شكراً. اسمي حاتم الكلاعي، عضو المجلس التأسيسي في تونس، وأحضر معكم ممثلاً عن البرلمان العربي، وتحديداً عن لجنة الشؤون الاجتماعية والثقافية والمرأة والشباب بالبرلمان العربي، التي تشرف على إعداد الوثيقة العربية لحقوق المرأة. من المعلوم أن حقوق المرأة يجب أن تتجاوز مستوى التفضل والتكرم عليها لتدخل حيز التشريع الثابت الدائم، وهو ما تم إنجازه في دستور تونس الجديد الذي نص بشكل صريح على التناصف في الترشح إلى كل المجالس المنتخبة. وهذا النهج من التشريع نحاول اليوم إرساءه في البرلمان العربي من خلال الوثيقة العربية لحقوق المرأة التي نصوغها اليوم بناء على قناعة أساسية، وهي أن المرأة العربية منفتحة بالضرورة على محيطها الخارجي، قادرة على التفاعل، على التثاقف، وقادرة على الريادة، بشرط التحرر من نوع من الثقافة الخاطئة والموانع الذكورية. لذلك تهتم الوثيقة العربية لحقوق المرأة بمعاني تكافؤ الفرص والعدل، والأهم من كل ذلك تطبيق القوانين والمواثيق ومحاربة المتاجرة بموضوع حقوق المرأة، ومحاربة اعتباره واجهة بروتوكولية مناسبتية. هذه الوثيقة العربية لحقوق المرأة تمثل اليوم أهم مشغل للبرلمان العربي ومحل اهتمام من كل أعضائه، والطريف أن أكبر المساهمين في هذه الوثيقة هم من رجال البرلمان العربي، وهذا يبشر بكل خير. وأذكر أن كل المنظمات الآن تدعم هذه الوثيقة، وننتظر من منظمة الأوان ومن أن تساهم أيضا في دعم هذه الوثيقة وفي إنجازها وفي المشاركة في الورشات الممهدة للوصول إليها. ولكم الشكر.
I thank the distinguished delegate from the Arab Parliament. I now recognize the distinguished delegate from 1035. You have the floor. Please proceed.
My name is Dr. Laleh Iftikhari, the member of Iranian Parliament. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Honorable parliamentarians, as representative of Iranian people and the chairwoman of Muslim Women Parliament, I do really hope by the grace of God and his Quranic message for convergence in the line of sublimation and growth of mankind. We all would be witnessing a certain parliament with its own executive agenda and shared legislation in the future. A parliament that would bring about human dignity, justice, and progress for all, especially for women, who have been deprived from their rights during history. When it comes to Iran's laws, women like men enjoy all human rights, and they can elect or be elected without any limitation. When it comes to executive fields, Iranian women have gained different executive positions, such as vice president, minister, dean of university, governor and mayor, judge and lawyer, and the businesswoman. Different organizational structures have been formed in Iran to support women for policymaking and so. For example, in the parliament, there is this fraction of women for legislation, and in the executive branch, there is a vice president in charge of women and family affairs. The third article of Iran's constitution underscores the elimination of discrimination and providing just possibilities for all women and men in all areas of life. Future strategies should be directed in a way that they would be preventing likely destructive measures that might hurt the society, especially women. Following items are some examples in this field. A, prevention of illegitimate sanctions and foreign occupation, and also interference in domestic affairs of the countries that will lead to insecurity and rape which in turn can cause mental and physical injuries to women and family and so, like what is happened and going on in Syria, Myanmar, and Central Africa and so. B, fighting against sexual abuse and women trafficking. C, changing the phrases like violence against women that associate women's weakness and inferiority to some positive phrases like defending women's dignity. And D, revision in the Millennium Goals to be done by members of parliaments and studying the lessons and challenges and offering constructive recommendation. And I have a question. The media made image of Muslim women, especially Iranian women, are not based on realities on the ground. How can these issues be addressed appropriately? Thank you for attention.
I thank the distinguished delegate from Iran. I now recognize the distinguished delegate from 1089. You have the floor, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Susan Troupe, Parliamentary Secretary for Status of Women Canada. Canada is a strong supporter of gender equality, the empowerment of women and girls, and the realization of human rights of women and girls, and the elimination of violence against women and girls. We also recognize that gender equality is not only a right in itself, but a prerequisite for achieving and sustaining poverty reduction, positive health and social outcomes, and sustainable economic growth. These issues are central to Canada's foreign and domestic policies, and I thought I would just share some of our statistics in Canada. In the House of Commons, 77 out of 308 parliamentarians are women, which is about 25%, and that's compared to 20% of seats held by women in 2000, and also following the previous election of 69 seats in that election. So we have increased as well. As far as ministers go, Prime Minister Stephen Harper has appointed more women ministers in the history of Parliament, and we have 32% of our cabinet ministers are women. In the Senate, 38 out of 104 are women. Parliamentarians can play a role in promoting women's political participation and representation. To encourage a greater number of women to participate, there must be a shift in public perception of women in politics. Parliament can promote this shift through public awareness movements and civic education with the goal of countering biases against women. In Canada, for example, Status of Women Canada had provided funding to the Association of Municipalities of Ontario to mentor girls, young girls, at the municipal level in politics, and that's working out very well. So there's various cities around Ontario that are mentoring young girls at the municipal level to give them insight into how politics works. And another widely used mechanism to strengthen the participation of women in parliaments is the creation of a women's association or caucus. These groups serve as a forum where women can network, share gender-related concerns, and advancing the mainstream of gender issues. In Canada, we also have an all-party women's caucus. And my colleague had also mentioned the job shadowing by university students, which is very effective. So students come and follow a female member of parliament for an entire day, and there's a few universities that are doing this, and it gives them again an insight into how politics works. And I think that's very important to be inclusive, to because a lot of young girls do not know what is involved in politics, and I'm finding the more that they learn what goes on in politics, in their mind, that they will want to, maybe 5 years, 10 years, or 15 years from now, will want to get involved in politics. But I think I can say not only our side of the House, which is the government, but even the two opposition members, all three of us in the House, all three parties, are very supportive of women in politics. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Distinguished delegate from the CSW Canada, and I now recognize the distinguished delegate 1044. You have the floor, please.
Merci. Merci, Madame la Présidente. Je voudrais remercier l'Union interparlementaire qui, depuis un certain temps, permet, en marge de la tenue de la session de la Commission de la femme, aux parlementaires de se réunir et d'échanger sur des thématiques très importantes. La rencontre de ce matin s'inscrit en droite ligne de la mise en d'une évaluation des OMD. Je pourrais dire qu'au niveau du Parlement burkinabé, nous ne sommes pas restés en reste et nous avons pu faire adopter sous la 4e législature une loi portant quota, fixation de quotas aux élections législatives et municipales. Après une année de mise en œuvre de cette loi, nous avons pu mesurer les lacunes ou les insuffisances de cette loi. Aujourd'hui, c'est de voir si vrai que la loi a permis d'avoir une augmentation de 3 points par rapport aux élections passées. Nous sommes passés à 18,3%, mais il n'en demeure qu'il y a une insuffisance. Ce que le Parlement constate, puisque ça a été une proposition de loi sous l'initiative d'un caucus genre, il faut que le partenariat entre le Parlement et la société civile se renforce. Et Monsieur le secrétaire général de l'UIP l'a dit. Et je pense que si les parlements initient des lois et que dans leur mise en œuvre, il n'est pas soutenu, je pense que ça sera des lois de plus. Parce que si la société civile ne prend pas la relève pour faire connaître la loi par la communauté, les parlementaires que nous sommes ne suffiront pas pour faire connaître les lois et permettre aux femmes de s'approprier cette loi. Nous sommes en train, encore sous l'égide de l'UIP, en train d'initier une proposition de loi sur les violences. Et je pense que c'est une très bonne chose. Et notre souhait, pour garantir la chance de la mise en œuvre de cette loi également, que nous ayons l'appui de la société civile. C'est ce que je voudrais dire. Et dire que même chez nous, s'il n'y a pas de loi fixant les quotas pour les postes de nomination, dans demain qu'il y a des efforts qui sont faits dans les nominations à des postes de haute responsabilité, ambassadeurs, présidents d'institutions, etc., etc. Et donc, nous avons tiré les leçons des insuffisances de notre loi. Ce n'est pas une liste de résultats, c'est une liste de 30%, de telle sorte qu'il n'y a pas une garantie. Et même si c'est une mesure transitoire, vous aimez dire temporaire, nous préférons le langage transitoire. N'en demeure qu'il faut que les femmes même se battent pour les prochaines élections, au moins pour que nous puissions atteindre les 30%. Je vous remercie.
I thank the distinguished delegate from Burkina Faso, and I would just like to call on all the distinguished delegates that will follow. Can we please keep it to 1 minute because we are running out of time? My apologies for that. Having said that, I now recognize the distinguished delegate from 1011. 1011, 1011. You have the floor, please, distinguished delegate. Please go ahead.
لطيفة الزيواني ممثلة عضو بالبرلمان المغربي. منذ الجمع العام للأمم المتحدة حول أهداف الألفية في شتنبر 2010 والذي دعا خلاله صاحب الجلالة الملك محمد السادس إلى إعداد تصور المستقبل لما بعد 2015 والمملكة المغربية معبأة من أجل تقييم مؤشرات أهداف الألفية من خلال تنظيمها لحوارات ومناظرات تقييمية من أجل بلورة مستقبل التعاطي مع آفاق هذه الأهداف لما بعد 2015 وباعتبار برلماني مغربية فقد ساهمت إلى جانب زملائي وزميلاتي في هذا التقييم الوطني عبر مراقبة السياسات العمومية بوسيلة الأسئلة الشفهية والكتابية أو عبر مساءلة السيد رئيس الحكومة في جلسة عامة مخصصة لموضوع حصيلة أهداف الألفية بالمغرب والتي انعقدت خلال غشت 2012 بمجلس المستشارين. لكن على العموم يمكن القول بأن المغرب حقق تقدما ملموسا في الأهداف المسطرة للألفية واقترب من أغلبية الأهداف التي برمجت لأفق 2015. ويهمني كبرلمانية التركيز على الهدف الثالث المتمثل في النهوض بالمساواة بين الجنسين واستقلالية النساء. فقد سجلنا أن تقدما وقع على مستوى ولوج النساء لمراكز القرار حيث ارتفع إلى حوالي 15.5% بالنسبة للمناصب المسؤولية في الوظيفة العمومية و 14.5% في مناصب السفراء. لكن رغم هذا التقدم فإن هذا المؤشر لا زال ضعيفا، كما أن هناك جرأة أكبر في تعيين النساء بمناصب حساسة وغير مسبوقة حيث لأول مرة يتم تعيين امرأة والية، وهو الأمر الذي أشدنا به وطلبنا جرأة أكبر في فتح كل المجالات أمام الكفاءات النسائية. وقد واجه البرلمان بعض مظاهر التراجع التي تم تسجيلها على مستوى تمثيلية النساء، حيث تم انتقاد الحكومة المشكلة بعد 25 نوفمبر 2011 لأنها لم تضم إلا وزيرة واحدة، وهو ما أدى إلى رفع تمثيلية النساء في التعديل الحكومي الأخير إلى 6. ومع ذلك فإن عمل تشريعيا وميدانيا ينتظرنا من أجل حسن تفعيل مقتضيات الدستورية الجديدة. وبالنسبة لنا في البرلمان نبذل جهدا من أجل تسريع وتيرة تفعيل هذه المقتضيات ودعم كل المبادرات المؤدية إلى المساواة والمناصفة. وفي هذا الإطار فقد تم تنظيم ندوات وأيام دراسية منفتحة ناقشت العديد من القضايا النسائية وسبل دعمها بالتشريعات، وانكبت على سبل المبادرة لتفعيل العديد.
I'm so sorry, madam. Please, the time is over. Unfortunately, we only have 1 minute per person. No, I have indicated before you spoke, madam. I said I apologize, only 1 minute because the time is over. Thank you very much. I now... I'm sorry, can I just get the... The list again. Technology.
Okay. Maybe you
those
can,
in charge.
You can take the next one. Who requested the floor?
I don't know who it was.
We can take by hand.
Can I just have the next person who indicated while we are sorting this out, who was on the list? There were four more? Yes, please, madam. What is the number there? Yeah. 10-12. Please take the floor. Thank you. Please switch on your microphone, madam. Press once.
Sí, yo soy Rosa Díaz, de senadora por México, y mi pregunta, bueno, saludo a la delegación iraní con quienes estuvimos hace poco más de 2 meses compartiendo nuestras experiencias, y voy a ser muy breve. Mi pregunta es para el señor Méndez. En el tema de cuotas de género, sabemos que sí se puede dar un gran avance, sin embargo, queremos saber cómo le hicieron ustedes para que los gobiernos también incluyan la paridad de género. O sea, si lo instituyeron en ley, si fue una iniciativa del propio gobierno o si fue una iniciativa de los parlamentarios hacia el gobierno. Es cuanto, gracias.
Thank you very much. I now recognize the distinguished delegate of 1075 will be followed by 1063, 1082, 1067, 1037, and 1010. So 1075, you have the floor, please. Please press your microphone. 1 minute, please. Distinguished delegate, 1 minute, please.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, for giving me the opportunity. My name is Honorable Fatou Mbaye, Deputy Speaker of the National Assembly of the Gambia. Let me first and foremost congratulate all the presenters. And like other countries, the Gambia have enacted the Women's Act of 2010 as a strategy to domesticate CEDAW and other international and regional conventions. We also enacted the Sexual Offences and Domestic Violence Act of 2013, amongst other, policies, programs, etc. My intervention, Madam Chair, is on women and the media. Whilst I acknowledge the critical role that the media plays in telling the stories of women and also in a strategic manner, influencing and increased participation of women, I think it is not just enough to be a women reporter or a journalist. As a layperson, I believe that their training is general, and they have to be recapacitized and given special training to tell the stories of women in a professional manner for it to have positive impact. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
so much, and thank you for keeping to time. I thank the distinguished delegate from the deputy speaker from Gambia, and I now recognize the distinguished delegate 1063. 1012, 1056, and 1102, you will be speaking after.
Thank you, Madam.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. My name is Bonto Segatle from the Parliament of Lesotho. I'm a Member of Parliament. I would like to share with this delegates here that we do in Lesotho have political will to promote women's participation in politics. This is reflected by recent legislative reforms undertaken to achieve this. Lesotho has a mixed member proportional representation electoral model, with two-thirds of the National Assembly composed of members elected from single-member constituencies and one-third elected through proportional representation. Before the 2012 general elections, all political parties met under the auspices of the IEC, Independent Electoral Commission, to review National Assembly Elections Act. One of the key amendments agreed upon was to prepare party lists along the zebra format. That is, where you have a woman as number one in the list, then you have a man as number two, and a man, woman number three, and man number four. The reason why we did this in a zebra format was to avoid a situation where political parties could club all men at the top, or more men at the top, and women at the bottom. So in the 2012 elections, general elections, this has ensured that 50% candidates were women, 50% candidates were men, and we achieved this. We did that also at local government election. I'm not going to share with you this because my 1 minute has expired. But this shows political will.
Thank you very much, distinguished delegate from Lesotho. I now recognize the distinguished delegate 1082. Please take the floor. 1082. Distinguished delegate of 1082 is not there. I'll move to the next distinguished delegate. 1082 there.
Merci. Non. Yes. Non. Je suis là, oui. Merci. Madame la Présidente, merci. Je suis du Gabon, présidente de la Commission des affaires sociales. Je prends la parole pour adhérer complètement à tout ce qui s'est dit, et notamment en ce qui concerne l'importance des partenariats entre les parlementaires et les ONG, particulièrement les associations de femmes juristes. Et il existe dans mon pays une volonté politique qui s'est exprimée à travers un décret présidentiel fixant les quotas, réservant donc 30% de places aux femmes et 30% de places aux jeunes dans les scrutins de liste. Et nous voudrions saluer le fait que la présidente de la Cour constitutionnelle, le président du Sénat, le procureur général de la République, le président de la Confédération patronale soient des femmes. Et nous voudrions aussi signaler que le code pénal a été revisité pour faire face aux violences faites aux femmes et punir sévèrement le harcèlement sexuel et le viol. Pour la promotion de la santé génésique, une loi a été prise pour libéraliser la contraception et permettre à la femme et surtout à la jeune fille de mieux disposer de son corps et lutter contre les grossesses précoces et les avortements clandestins. Donc je voudrais juste pour terminer, recommander à l'UIP de faire en sorte que le FNUAP, le Fonds des Nations Unies pour la Population, continue à soutenir l'idée d'avoir un réseau de femmes africaines, ministres et parlementaires, qui est actuellement en veilleuse. Merci. Et qui permettait un échange d'expériences entre nous. Merci, Madame la Présidente.
Thank you. I thank the distinguished delegate from Gabon. I now recognize the distinguished delegate from 1067. 1067, you have the floor, please.
Hi. Yeah. I am a proportional representative of National Assembly in Korea, South Korea. After I briefly mention about Korea's current situation, then I'm going to share two questions regarding to increasing women's participation in decision-making position. 한국은 현재 의회에서 15.7%의
시트가 여성입니다. 2000년도 초반에 5.9%에 비하면은 비약적인 발전을 했고 이것은 우리가 Public Official Election Law가 바뀌면서 생긴 현상입니다. 이런 상황에서 2012년에 First Female President가 탄생했고 이 이후로는 좀 더 정교한 제도의 변화가 일어나고 있습니다. 아직 행정부에서는 4.4%의 그 고위직만이 여성인데 앞으로 2016년에는 13.4%, 2017년에는 15%를 올리려고 하고 있습니다. 또한 이런 고위직 여성 진출을 위해서 Female Talent Database 시스템을 만들고 이들을 가르치고 또 멘토링하는 프로그램도 법으로 보장하고 있습니다. 그리고 Work Family Balance를 지키기 위한 법도 만들고 있고 특히 남성의 육아 참여, 그다음에 차일드 케어 시스템을 확충하는 등 많은 제도의 변화가 있고 있습니다. 자, 이런 상황에서 저는 두 가지 질문이 있는데요. 첫째, 현재 대학 진학률에 있어서 벌써 여아가 남아를 앞서고 있는 상황, 그리고 검사와 판사와 같은 시험에서 여성들이 앞서고 있는 상황에서 남성들이 여성에 대해서 역차별을 받는다고 지금 굉장히 고민을 하고 있습니다. 또 하나는 대한민국 굉장히 로우 버스 레이트가 심각한데요. 이런 상황에서 여성의 진출을 더 많이 장려하는 것이 상황을 악화시킬까에 대한 걱정을 하고 있습니다. 이런 부분에 대해서 다른 나라들의 경험을 쉐어하고 싶습니다.
Distinguished delegate from South Korea, I now recognize the distinguished delegate from 1010 and 1057 will 56 sorry will follow. Please stick to 1 minute.
شكراً. شكراً. بداية لا شك أن مشاركة النساء في المجال السياسي هي مدخل لصناعة التغيير الحقيقي في المجتمعات وهذه المشاركة لا يمكن إلا أن تساهم في مزيد من تحسين الأوضاع الاجتماعية والاقتصادية داخل الوطن وفي بلدي المغرب الذي أتشرف بكوني عضو مكتب مجلس النواب في المغرب اتخذت العديد من التدابير خلال العشرية الأخيرة على مستوى تطوير المنظومة التشريعية والمنظومة القانونية بدءا بالدستور 2011 الذي ضمن العديد من الحقوق للنساء إضافة إلى مجموعة من القوانين التنظيمية سواء القانون التنظيمي لمجلس النواب أو القانون التنظيمي لمجلس المستشارين وقانون التنظيمي للأحزاب ترسانة قانونية مهمة مشجعة لمشاركة النساء كذلك على المستوى الجماعات المحلية هناك ترسانة قانونية مهمة أعطتنا تطور على مستوى الأرقام انتقلنا من 10% في البرلمان إلى 17% انتقلنا من 0.58 في الجماعات إلى 10% انتقلنا إلى إحداث صناديق لدعم تشجيع تمثيلية النساء وهذه كلها إشارات مهمة وإيجابية ولكن اليوم بعد ونحن في إطار تقييم الأهداف الإنمائية للألفية وخاصة الهدف الثالث لا شك أننا نحتاج كمجتمع دولي كبرلمانات دولية إلى إعادة التفكير في آليات لدعم المشاركة النسائية آلية الكوطة في اعتقادي تحتاج إلى آلية لحمايتها حماية الكوطة حتى تكون فعلا وسيلة لتخريج كفاءات نسائية جديدة لإبراز نخب نسائية جديدة في مجتمعاتنا لأنه لابد أن تحس النساء أن انتخاب النساء يعود بالنفع عليهن ويعود في تحسين الأوضاع الاجتماعية والاقتصادية وأن لا تبقى المشاركة السياسية مجرد يعني ريع تخوضه بعض النساء ولا تستفيد منه نساء أخريات كذلك أحيي السيد مينديس بوتا على اقتراح أن نجعل الإعلام وسيلة من وسائل التشجيع فيعطى للأحزاب أكثر ثم لا يمكن أن نغفل دور الأحزاب السياسية فأي قانون يحتاج إلى أحزاب قوية لكي تنزله وشكرا
Thank you very much. I now recognize the distinguished delegate from 1056. I beg of you, one of the panelists have to leave. It's not here in the afternoon. She still need to respond. And 1 o'clock, there's something in this room. Can you please bear with me?
Grazie. Il senatrice del Parlamento italiano, il mio paese, l'Italia, già da tempo ha iniziato un percorso a favore della parità dei diritti femminili e a favore della parità di genere. Abbiamo ottenuto diversi risultati, ma c'è ancora molto da fare, soprattutto nella rappresentanza femminile nel Parlamento. Oggi al Senato siamo il 29% e alla Camera il 31% e nelle partecipazioni dei consigli di amministrazione. Ed è proprio una recente legge del 2011 che fissa una quota di rappresentanza di genere del 20% per il primo mandato che dura 3 anni e del 33% per gli altri 2 mandati. Troppo poco. Io vorrei che da qui a poco tempo non si parlasse più di quote, perché questo significherebbe che è stata raggiunta finalmente la tanto auspicata parità di genere, il giusto equilibrio tra uomini e donne in tutti i settori nella società. Grazie.
Recognize the distinguished delegate from 10-12. You have 1 minute, please. 10-12 is not there. Then I'll move to the distinguished delegate 11-02. Distinguished delegate 11-02 is not there.
Yes, we're here.
Yes,
thank
please
you,
proceed.
Madam Chair.
But she didn't answer.
We do. I'm Joan Dogoyo from Suriname. A member of parliament, the youngest member. We do have a success story in Suriname. Our current speaker and deputy speaker of the house are women. However, in parliament, we started in 2005 with a 25% of female MPs. And after the election of 2010, we dropped to a marginal 10%. And after the appointment of minister, we reached 13.72%. We need to implement drastic measures to increase more female MPs after our elections next year. I would like to comment the inspiring tone in the remarks that were delivered today. I would also like to place a small comment on the statement that was delivered by Ms. Fumsile. We agree that the steps to gender equality should not be baby steps. She also emphasized that the focus should be on quality and not numbers. I have the feeling that when we talk about women's participation in decision making, we tend to bring the issue of quality in the debate. I believe that it forms a constraint, since I'm also a young woman in politics, it forms a constraint for young women to take those giant steps that we are talking about to participate in politics. How do we define this quality we are talking about? That's it. Thank you.
I thank the distinguished delegate from Suriname. I now have the distinguished delegate 1039. Please take the floor. 1039. Yes, madam.
Hello. Thank you very much. My name is Dr. Christine Ombaka, and I come from Kenya, and I'm a member of parliament. In the Kenya constitution, which is a new one, we have 30% quota for women. But we still had a challenge here, and I'd like to know the experience of other people who have more than 30%. The women did not achieve 30% because there are certain positions that they still had to contest alongside men, especially the 70%. The women did not achieve this. And that meant that the government had to ensure the 30% is achieved according to the constitution, and then they had to nominate women to fill those gaps. May I know, in some countries where the quota system is implemented, and what is your experience on this? Thank you.
I now turn the floor back to the panelists. Mrs. Askedotter, you have the floor, please.
Thank you very much, and thank you all for this interesting discussion. I just would like to stress that, from my point of view, that quotas are an effective tool to increase the number of women in politics or in the economy, but it requires a political will, and it is a question of democracy. If there is lack of women, it reflects lack of democracy. So it's really important to work for increasing the number of women. That's my final remark. Thank you.
I thank you very much, madam. And, I will now give Mr. Botha.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairperson. It's not possible to give answers to 25 demands. 25 people have spoken here. But let me just give you some remarks. First, Rosa Diaz. Me he preguntado cómo se hacen las cuotas en Portugal. Se fue un buen ejemplo de cómo la política voluntad de un líder ha conducido a una ley electoral sobre las cotas. Y ustedes lo conocen muy bien. No es de mi partido, es socialista, se llama Antonio Guterres y es el alto comisario para los refugiados de las Naciones Unidas. Y él ha prometido en campaña electoral de establecer una cuota para las mujeres o no, o para los hombres, porque es una cuota para el sexo menos representado, y lo ha hecho, lo ha cumplido. Tenía la mayoría en el Parlamento y ha hecho aprobar con esa mayoría la ley de las cuotas que hoy nos permite a todos para tener más mujeres en los municipios y en el Parlamento.
I would just like to say in general that every country has its own background on history. It's not possible to have one solution for every country at the same time. I told in the beginning that there are countries with quotas that they don't achieve the results, and that there are countries without quotas that they are on the top. So there is no magic solution for everybody. I would like, someone said that the women should be put as candidates on the circumscriptions that are easier to win. I say that in the UK, in 97, the Labour Party put this in practice, and the number of women jumped from 37 to 101 in the House of Commons. So it resulted. If that is the will, it's always the will of a party, the will of many parties, the will of the women, the will of the leaders. It requires political will. If there is no political will, nothing will happen for sure. Someone said that the quotas should only be applied for the first time that a woman is elected to the parliament. I don't agree. The quotas should be always implemented. And if day to day, they may favorish the accession of women, maybe in the future it will be men who need to be protected also to be represented in the parliament. So the quotas should always be implemented. Doesn't matter if it's the first time, the second time, or the third time. Democracy will work. That's my final remark.
Thank you very much. And I'll give to Zina for...
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. Just very quickly to respond to the few remarks on support that you, several of you have made. Yes, of course, I mean, the international organizations, both the IPU and also UN Women, have those support program for capacities of women parliamentarians, and you can address to us your requests if you have any. We will follow up on this. The Arab Parliament, of course, we can discuss it further as well. I think it's a very good initiative. So for the rest, I think that Mr. Mendes-Botta gave some answers. Just Hungary, it's a difficult situation. There are things to be done, and notably at the high political level, I think the IPU can be a forum where the Speaker of Parliament and other key politicians can hear and interact with others who would encourage them to maybe change their position. So we can discuss it further as well off the mic.
Thank you very, very much. Thank you, Zaya. I would like to take this opportunity to thank our distinguished panelists very much for your interventions and for your guidance, etc. And I would like to apologize to the interpreters that we ran over time and to the people who have the next event. Thank you very much. My apologies if you could not all take the floor and I had to reduce your time, but it's due to the pressures. My apologies for that. Have a lovely lunch. See you at 2:45. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Margaret.
Yeah.